I want to announce right off the bat that House Bill 2093 will not have a hearing on that today. There will be some more work done on that, but it wasn't quite ready, so they'll bring it back when they get done. Open a hearing on House Bill, public hearing on House Bill 2023. Mr. Raff, John Phillips, and General Caldwell, please. Please go ahead, whoever wants to start off.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify on 2023, which I think probably most of you are familiar with. This bill was pre-filed at our request in an attempt to rectify legislative actions of the 2005 session, where the Veterans Affairs Committee sought to provide a property tax break for service members serving on federal active duty. The exemption is for $60,000 of assessed value on any homestead of qualifying service members. After the legislation was passed, it became apparent that the way the law was written, that essentially no service members could qualify due to filling the service time restrictions that were placed into the law. That was not the intent of the committee. It was not the intent of us who testified in favor of it. At the outset, but nevertheless, in the practical application of it, it became basically unworkable. We think now, through the interim process and through input from sage-minded folks, that we've got a fix in this legislation, and that either a guardsman or a reservist will be qualified under this act if they serve at least 178 days in federal active duty status. And there's some dates that also, there's some other language in the law that allows it during the bill to push it back to September 11, 2001 to make sure that we do the catch-up, which I think was the intent of the 2005 session. And I'll be happy to answer any questions, or you can continue on.
Any questions from the committee? Thank you, General. I'm sorry.
I have a question. Just for my education, if you could please... this is a property tax exemption up to $60,000, and I had been looking at this for another reason, and I didn't realize that it was that amount. I thought it was $15,000 and $18,000.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cowan, indeed it is $60,000. I don't recall a discussion on the $15,000 or $18,000. This was enacted. It was a $60,000.
That was for the disabled vets. The other number.
Oh, that's what I'm disabled confused vets. I'm sorry. Yeah. Thank you for the clarification.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my question then is, please tell me exactly what this does. And I've read it, but I would like to hear in your words what it does.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Scott, in essence, what it boils down to is that if a member of the National Guard, the Reserve Forces of the United States, are called to federal active duty, then for at least a minimum number of 178 days of continuous federal active duty, regardless of where they serve that duty, then they're eligible to go to their county assessor and receive a $60,000 deduction from their homestead. I don't remember the exact term, but the valuation on their homestead.
And is it for follow up, please? And is it for the period of time that they served, or is it ongoing for a period of time?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Scott, it's a one-time deal. However, it's feasible that if you serve more than once, and you have a break in service, go back for another period of time, and you span the two tax years, then you could do it essentially for back-to-back years. And I think that's. Typically, the reserve call-up, the guard call-up, have been somewhere between 15 and 24 months. It's fairly rare anymore that we'll have the 24, it appears, based on the DOD policies. right now, but they're trying to get it down to a 12-month period. But I think it's fairly common that most of these people that would apply would span a tax year because of the way the deployments fall. You never know when they'll hit.
And so, just to be clear, it would be for active duty personnel that served actively 178 days or whatever number of days. Did you save it? Whatever it was, 78, whatever.
178.
And it would apply for the tax years that they do that. And then it would also, in some cases, potentially be retroactive to July 1, 2002?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. I think the language, I believe it says 2002. July 1, to, Section 4, notwithstanding the deadline set forth in the ORS, tax years beginning or after July 1, 2001 or before July 1, 2007. So it goes back to 2001, not 2002.
I think it says for each tax year beginning on or after July 1, 2002. At least the one I'm looking at says that.
And I think there's an answer to that, and maybe I think... if I remember correctly, the federal, no, I'm out of my league here. Can you answer that?
Mr. Where is he really? Reserves were covered or something?
I don't know.
The statement says 2001.
Mr. Chair?
The bill says 2002.
Line 16, page 1.
I was on a different page.
It says 2001.
Each tax year beginning or after July 1.
I'm sorry, please. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Phillips. I'm with the Oregon Department of Revenue. And Representative Scott, I'd like to try to answer your question. In Section 3, which is on page 2 on line 41, it applies to exemptions claimed for tax years beginning July 1st, 2001. And that's the date that we're looking at.
That's
what the general was referring to.
So then, could you tell me what Section 1, Sub 2, where it says on first page, July 1, 2002.
Line 16.
Yeah, line 16.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scott, I believe that's referring to a percentage of growth in the value of the exemption. That's in it.
So it would be evaluated on the percentage of growth if it was effective 2001, they would have served their term and the growth would have occurred at 2002.
Right.
Okay, I got
Mr.
it.
Mr. Chair.
Great. Thank you very much for the explanation.
Representative Shoffler.
Just so I got all this straight, I have a $200,000 house. I'm only going to pay taxes on $140,000 of assessed value in this period.
Bingo.
Correct?
If you served.
I can't get it. And then I just want to make a comment to you, Mr. Chair. I've read some very unfortunate circumstances some of our National Guards people have had where they've literally lost their house or the financial burden we've put these people under because they aren't working at their regular job. And now they are getting a lot less pay. Am I correct in that? I've read some of that in the paper that they've really...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Shoffler, indeed there have been some instances where guardsmen and reservists have left jobs that pay considerably better than what they're accustomed to working with or earning. There are federal statutes that protect a lot of the things that they could defer, they could delay, they can do several different things. What we have we've discovered through basically families coming to us looking for assistance, even though we brief all of this to our family assistance folks, and I know that you'd say, well, you got the briefing, but they don't really understand all those things, and particularly credit card companies. They can't charge the rates they're charging, but yet they continue to do it. And we've had some major run-ins with them, and I think we went to the Attorney General, and he has made some moves toward these companies, and I think overall it's getting better. But there are cases where people have taken substantial reductions in their monthly pay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One more follow-up question on that. I was walking door-to-door last summer, and a woman at this door said that only the financial institutions, only if you're aware or knowledgeable of, and correct me if this is wrong, only if you're aware or knowledgeable of that, those procedures to delay payment or defer payment until you get back into your regular pay rate as a regular civilian. But if you don't know about that, if you're not knowledgeable about that, there's nothing legally stopping them from foreclosing or do whatever measures they can do to make your life miserable because you ain't got enough money to pay your bills. Is that true?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schaffler, indeed, it's the individual's responsibility to, you know, claim those rights that they have underneath the federal statutes and Oregon statutes as well. And it is problematic. And like I said, usually when we hear about it, it's usually in a crisis mode. And we've had several of those situations occur. And I'll go back to earlier testimony we had when we did our overview that one of our success stories, I think, out of the 2005 session, was clearly the establishment of the emergency relief fund that the legislature put in for us, and we have bailed numerous people out during these crisis situations and then gotten them appropriate help. The Oregon Bar Association, for instance, has a group of lawyers who have offered pro bono work to assist these people, and that's where we were getting our information that some of these credit card companies were just simply being unruly and just plain bad citizens, no matter how you cut it. And so we've gotten a lot accomplished. I think we've done some good things. We've helped those people out. I will not sit here and tell you that 100% of the people can say my situation was a success, because I know some of them weren't, and they don't feel that way. And that's very unfortunate. But you go from $100,000 a year income, and you're a sergeant, and suddenly you're down to $40,000, and you lose $60,000 of your annual income. I mean, that's going to have an impact. I don't really care how good you are with your programs, and so it has had impacts. I'll tell you one other story that happened to us. You know, there's been lots of good things that have happened through different groups that have come forward who have helped out in these situations, raised money and done these sort of things. But we had two computer experts working at the Portland Air Base, and these were junior-ranked individuals. When 2001 occurred, the 142nd Fighter Wing was put on alert. 2001, it was Title 10. We had managed initially the first months of that engagement, if you will, that requirement, by moving these people out of Intel, 2 weeks with us, 2 weeks back, and they were exchanging. Big Air Force stepped in and said, sorry, we want everybody on. You guys, you don't have that authority to do that in Oregon. And they pushed everybody on to Title 10. These two gentlemen were both making over $120,000 a year, and they went to a $44,000 income. Now, they did their duty. They served. We could have managed right there in Portland, Oregon, without doing that, but that wasn't the requirement the federal government put on us. And we worked with them through the USERRA Act and the other federal statutes to try to protect them from their problems. At the end of the day, when they did come off federal active duty and their tour was up, each with 9 or 10 years of service, they didn't reenlist. And they were tremendous assets to have that kind of intellect and that ability at that rank structure in our organization. So there, it isn't a perfect world, and sometimes it's out of our control to impact it. But there's been good work done by the last session of this body, veterans groups, different organizations to try to help these soldiers when we know about it. And sometimes we get rubes, too, as Representative Boquist could tell you about it, one we've been dealing with, and Mac McDonald and other folks have here recently. But by and large, I think we've had a fairly good success.
Thank you. Any further questions? Okay. Member, what's the next?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Larry Rapp. I'm a member of the United States Army Reserve. My unit's in Portland, Oregon. And since September 11, 2001, I have been mobilized and deployed twice to overseas locations. I'm here today just to thank you for your committee and for our legislators' support in the efforts like this, and ask you for your continued efforts to pass bills like this that support reservists and guardsmen in our state. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your service. And I know that it's a lot different, like when I was a young kid and joined the Marines and with no obligations standing behind me financially,
but to disrupt families, and the examples the general just gave, I'm sure I speak for all Oregonians when I say thank you, and we do appreciate your sacrifices.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, my name is John Phillips with the Department of Revenue. I just want to thank you for this bill because we've had a lot of frustration in trying to implement the 2945 House bill from last session, and we've dealt with a lot of frustrated people. And I think this will address those concerns. I identified in my testimony five concerns that we've dealt with, a couple of them pretty serious in terms of the issue that General Caldwell mentioned in terms of nobody qualifying because they had to qualify before they applied, and they couldn't qualify until some future year. We believe that's dealt with. In the interim, though, we adopted an administrative rule that said performing service means, ordered to serve means performing service, and so that allowed counties to take applications and actually grant some in some cases. So this will actually put it in the law, and we appreciate that. The other issue was the shift from Title 32 to Title 10. This bill deals with that. There was a mix of the use of killed in action versus died in the statute. You could apply for the exemption if you, your survivors could apply for your exemption if you die, but you couldn't actually be granted the exemption unless you were killed in action. That's the way the bill read. So this addresses that issue. And then the change in status I mentioned and homestead, for which you have a definition now in this bill. I just identify a couple of changes. We worked quite extensively on this during the interim with the House Interim Revenue Committee, particularly Representative Boquist and your legislative counsel, to try to figure out what was intended. And so we're pretty good with this. The two additional changes are those who are deployed under the Emergency Management Assistance Compact. And so since we as a tax agency are not familiar with that concept, we'll be working with the general to make sure that whatever application an otherwise qualified person would have would clearly indicate that they are serving under that status. So I don't anticipate a problem. And then the retroactive provision, which will create additional workload for counties that accept these applications, but counties have been very supportive in wanting to get these service members the exemption that they're entitled to. So I hope that's helpful, and I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee? And I'll just add, I know Representative Boquist worked hard on this in the interim, and he couldn't be here today, so that's why he's not here. I mean, he would be here if he could be. Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify on the bill? Okay. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2023 and open the public hearing on House Bill 2026. General Caldwell.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brigadier General Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department, and I'm testifying here today in support of House Bill 2026. This bill, I believe, brings equity to our soldiers, airmen, and all service members who, by no fault of their own, perhaps end up being placed on active duty and, by chance, end up serving their duty inside the boundaries of the state of Oregon. As we witnessed in the global war on terror, many of the reserve components have been called to perform important duties here in Oregon. To give you an example, we have deployed several dozen members of the Oregon National Guard for security duty at the Umatilla Army Depot, as well as security duty at our airports after the incident that occurred with the shoe situation coming over here a few years ago. In the Umatilla Army Depot example, by luck of the draw, about a third of the unit that was deployed on federal active duty at Fort Lewis, roughly 600 people in the total unit, about 150 to 200 of them ended up being sliced off and sent to Umatilla Army Depot, where they were assigned to do what would typically be termed active duty Title 10 tasks. But they were on Title 10, so they got sent down there. The fact that they happened to be residents of Oregon made them tax eligible to pay taxes on everything above $6,000. So their buddies who were across the river didn't have to pay it. They did. Well, we got legislative fix for that, and we did fix it for that particular group of people. What this bill does is
recognize that as this could happen to any reservist. And so we want to make sure that it's the same problem for them if it was to occur. That bill that we did get passed fixed that one particular situation. We think this will fix this total issue, and it will afford equality to all the service members who find themselves performing duties for longer than 3 weeks. I might also add that the typical annual training period is for 2 weeks. And it very rarely I can't think of an example, maybe perhaps at the general officer level, where a person would be serving more than 2 weeks and earning over $6,000 during that period, in a 3-week period. So I think it protects that aspect of what the Oregon law currently allows for exemption. Also doesn't take away and allow full-time people to get a tax exemption that they would normally pay anyway. So I think it's written tightly enough to take care of the problem and also give our members and all service members the tax benefits that they would enjoy if they weren't situated inside the boundaries. That concludes my testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions in the committee? Thank you. Hearing no, would anybody else like to testify on the bill? Hearing none, close the hearing on House Bill 2026. And no further business before the committee. Committee is adjourned.